Hello and welcome to the Bestseller Experiment, where we explore the inner game of writing and inspire you to start, finish, and publish your book. I'm Mark DeVoe, and this week I'm treating you to the best of the Bestseller Experiment. I've delved through and handpicked my favourite shows of the 500 plus that we've done of best-selling authors who have collectively sold over 1 billion books. Who's it going to be this week?
Let's run the show.
Hello and welcome to the Bestseller Experiment, where we continue to discover what makes a best-selling novel. I'm Mark Stay.
And I'm Mark DeVoe. And let's give people a little taster of who's coming on the show later on.
Oh, this was amazing. This is the legend that is Brandon Sanderson. Brandon is an American fantasy and science fiction writer. Certainly for me, the first I ever heard of him was when he completed Robert Jordan's series, The Wheel of Time. Robert Jordan sadly passed away before he could complete The Wheel of Time. And Brandon boldly stepped in and completed and wrote in Robert's Jordan's style to complete the series. But he's also written the Mistborn series, the Stormlight Archive. And these are huge books. The world building is incredible. His plot and his characters are fantastic. And people love him. And he gives back to the community as well. He's one of these guys. He does, I know we don't like to plug other people's podcasts, but he does a podcast called Writing Excuses, which I find very useful. He's, if you ever see him at a panel at something like Galantzfest or whatever, he is just incredible. He has a work ethic like you wouldn't believe. And I think there's a reason, well, I mean, we'll hear about we'll it in the interview, but there's a reason why he succeeds. There's a reason why he's done as well as he has. So
before we dive in, actually, there's a bit of magic. There's a bit of magic that I think this is really worth listening to, because a lot of people, I know that anyone into epic fantasy and anyone of the six, is how many millions of books has Brandon sold? It's an incredible number, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's a lot. But for anyone that's into Brandon, they're going to be wetting themselves waiting to hear this interview, which is why we're drawing it out. There is so much incredible knowledge and advice for any writer in this interview. I could not believe the amount of notes I've written listening through this. And we're going to go into a very deep dive after the interview. There's some stuff that came up, which I thought, wow, this was kind of like slapped me in the face. And I thought this was great, great advice. So Mark, let's dive in to Mr. Brandon Sanderson.
Brandon, welcome to the Bestseller Experiment. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing just fine.
Excellent. Great to see you. Now, I thought what we could do is kick off with some listener questions, if that's okay. So, in no particular order, okay. Steve Gowland, who is writing his own epic fantasy series, he asks, do you think the success of Game of Thrones has tainted the fantasy genre, causing it to be everywhere, which isn't a bad thing, but also blocking out other series? Do you think that we can have too much of a good thing?
Huh, this is an interesting way to phrase it. When I was trying to break in, Game of Thrones, the book series, was the thing that all the editors were looking for. I would go to conventions and try to pitch them on my book, and they'd say, is it like Game of Thrones? Can you make it more like Game of Thrones? So this has been an issue since 1998. And it hasn't stifled a lot of people coming in since then. So I would say, no, I don't think this is a bad thing. In fact, the writing and books are not a zero-sum game. People often, there are lots of different entertainment choices, let's say. And so a book series getting this popular is only going to make more people read and want more book series like it to read. So I would say there has never been a better time to try to publish an epic fantasy book than right now.
Awesome. Good stuff. And who do you read at the moment?
The book I read most recently was The Emerald Circus by Jane Yolen, which I loved. Before that, I read The Star-Touched Queen by, I'm going to get her name wrong, Roshani Chachki. And I am currently reading, is it Beneath or Underneath? Underneath the Pendulum Sun. I just picked it up because Jeanette, the author, I met at a signing, and it sounded really interesting. And so I started reading it, and it is really good.
Fantastic. And what is it that excites you most about the fantasy genre these days?
Ooh, the fantasy genre. So it's during my time, my 20 years of trying to break in and then getting published, fantasy has undergone a lot of changes. And I sensed it when I was trying to break in among myself and my friends in the late 90s, early 2000s, everyone was getting a little bit tired of fantasy doing the same thing. Not that that thing is bad. I love that thing. It's the basically, you know, what Tolkien inspired, and we all love Tolkien. If you weren't around back then, Tolkien came out and then had the audacity to just kind of die on us, so we didn't get any more Tolkien, right? And so everyone was trying to write like Tolkien. And through the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of this sort of big looming shadow of Tolkien. Like now, there's a bit of a shadow of George R. R. Martin. And that's, again, it wasn't a bad thing then. It's not a bad thing now. But fantasy did in the late 90s feel like it hit a bit of a rut. There were wonderful things out there, but the things that were being promoted a lot all kind of had the same flavor, so to speak. And what I like about fantasy right now is you go look at the shelf and the flavors are, you know, there's so many different types, styles, traditions, subgenres. We're building off of so many different things that when you pick up a book, you never know what tradition it's going to be, and that's great. You'll find things that have Middle Eastern mythology mixed in, or you'll find things with a lot of Asian mythology, or things that, you know, you never knew that you wanted until you picked it up. And I think it's been very good for the genre. People like N.K. Jemisin and just a lot of the variety you have now. So that excites me.
We're seeing a lot more diversity in the writers these days as well. Still a ways to go, I think, but that's got to be a good thing too, yeah?
Yeah. The thing about it is, and I'm going to get on a hobby horse now, if that's okay. I found a lot of people would read fantasy when they were young and then fall out of love with it in their 20s. Or this happened very frequently with the genre. And interviewing these people and talking to them as they come through my line and say, you know, I didn't read fantasy for the last 10 years until someone gave me a book that I fell in love with again and I remembered why I loved it. It feels to me that one of the reasons we read fantasy is for a sense of wonder, a sense of getting something new and exciting, a new world to explore. And so this is why that rut can be really bad. Not that any of those books are bad, but if the readership is pulled into fantasy because they get to explore something new, but then fantasy only provides the same thing, what happens is people feel like there isn't something new and that they've outgrown the genre, when really that sense of wonder you can still find as long as there's a variety of types of stories and types of worlds and types of authors who are writing it. And this, I think, without this, the genre dies and our readership leaves. And with this, the genre becomes vibrant and that sense of wonder becomes a constant and powerful part of it. So I'm really excited to see it happening.
Excellent. It's funny you should say it. I've just read a book called Paperbacks from Hell by Grady Hendrix, which is kind of history of horror paperbacks in the 70s and 80s. And horror kind of died off in the early 90s. And I think one of the reasons was it was mostly white guys in their 40s, you know, writing the same old. And I think you're right. I think, and it's great to see, particularly coming up through YA as well, greater diversity of writers and readers too. Couple of questions that which kind of collide. Julian has a question. MD Thomas has a question. And MD, he says he knows the Wheel of Time series is done, but he wonders if you ever still think about it and maybe the potential of maybe going back to that world. And then Julian asks about old series are being picked up and rebooted all the time. And you know, what's the distinction between fan fiction and canon and where do you draw the line? I mean, was Wheel of Time like a fan fiction thing for you? Because you're obviously clearly a huge fan of Robert Jordan. Or was it intimidating to approach that series?
Man, there's like seven questions wrapped up in there. So let's approach, would I write any more Wheel of Time? And the answer to that is no. This is because Robert Jordan himself was very uncomfortable with the idea of someone writing in his world. Famously, before he passed away, people would ask him, what happens if you pass away? He would say, well, you better hope that doesn't happen because I'll order all of my notes burned and you'll never get an answer to the ending. Now, he changed his mind, but only in like the last few months before he passed away, he asked for it to be completed. Going any further than what he asked would be against his wishes. Not that I have any problem with authors writing other people's worlds, but this one in specific, I don't believe the author wanted any more to be done. In fact, he was very uncomfortable with the idea of even what I did. It was almost like what he did was what something he allowed for the fans because he knew they needed it. And so while I do think about the Wheel of Time, I dream of where it would go, it's going to remain dreams. This question of what's the line between fanfic and not, boy, I have no idea. You know, I've thought about this before, and it just comes down to semantics. Where do you want to put that definition? If the definition of fanfic is anything written except by the main author, then totally what I wrote was fanfic. There were certainly lots of, you know, fan joy on my part, having grown up reading the series, being able to participate in it. It was intimidating, certainly, but it was amazing. I often say it's like, you know, the Vinci's workshop, right? He wanders off and leaves everything there, and you get to be the first person who comes in and sees what he was working on and how he was doing it and things like this. It's just a wonderful experience. Overwhelmingly difficult, but also very, very satisfying. But it is also done, and it is time for it to be done.
Awesome. You work on multiple projects simultaneously. You're very prolific. What's the process that allows you to work on more than one thing at once?
So I really don't. People assume that I do more than I do. The way my process works is the longer I work on a project, the more sort of antsy I get to be done with it, so to speak. And this is something I've trained myself to deal with, to keep my focus, to be excited. You always have to be excited about the scene you're writing today. You can't write your book because you're excited about the scene you'll write tomorrow. You got to be excited about today's scene, or you got to cut it, or you got to make it exciting. Every scene has to have the potential to be somebody's favorite scene in the book. But there's a part of me that gets wanderlust that starts building the moment I start on a project. And when I get done with a book, I want to do something completely different. I am so done and tired. And this is important because I can't generally go right into revisions because I'm burned out on the book already. I can't go into a sequel. I learned this very early in my career. I tried going straight into a sequel in the Mistborn series, and I was just burned out. What I was writing was terrible. And so whatever my psychology is, it needs that chance to do something different immediately. And I often go to something that has some distinct stylistic or genre difference from what I'm writing. Usually if I'm writing a big epic, I immediately will go into something that's fast-paced, single viewpoint, right? And that allows me to be productive, to be always excited about what I'm working on and things like this. There's this momentum that happens in creative fields. I don't know if you've felt it, but really time away from it, going slower, generally results in worse writing. Maybe not in the prose level, right? Prose level can take a lot of time to get going. But when you're immersed in a story, when you're immersed in the setting and the characters, connections are happening, you're putting things together, the chapters are building upon each other and getting better and better and better. In a lot of ways, the faster you can do something, the better it is to an extent. This is why I do think NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month thing done in November, is a really good exercise for people, because that might be too fast. But for a lot of us, Remains of the Day was written in 18 days and things like this. And so immersing yourself in it, whatever that speed is for you, is good. And then kind of pulling out of it and taking a deep breath. And when I do that, I try to immerse myself in something else as soon as possible. And this is just how my psychology works. Now, you can't just keep doing that forever. You have to go in and do the revisions. And the latest Stormlight book, we spent probably 8 or 9 months in revisions, which is like hitting the brakes for me dramatically. But each of those passes makes the book so much better. One of the things that about my, if you heard this explanation, you can understand maybe why it took me so long to break in as an author. I wrote 13 novels before I sold one, and it was because I was loving that immersion in a new project, but I was not learning how to take a good book and make it great. I was avoiding that distinctly because I don't like it. So how do I write so quickly? People ask this. I am not that fast a writer. I write about 2,000 words a day. I write about 500 words an hour when I'm on. But I just keep at it. I'm immersed in it, and I write every day. And I immediately try to immerse myself in something else and get that momentum going as soon as I'm done.
So the key is really just to keep yourself immersed till you get that draft done, then find something fresh to work on, stay immersed in that, and then you come back and do revisions, and you're seeing it with fresh eyes, and you got the energy to get start rolling that boulder back up the hill again.
Yeah, and that's my process. I'm sure among the authors you've talked to and things you've found, everyone's process is dramatically different from everyone else's process, and what works for me may not work for you.
Okay. To what extent should a fantasy novel be rooted in the real world?
There's no should in writing. There are things to try out, things to see if they work for you, tools to use and to discard when they're not helping you. How much should it be rooted in the real world? How much do you want it to be? Fantasy, like science fiction, is generally a reflection of your personal experience in the world around you, not an attempt to recreate the past and or to project the future. Some science fiction does do this as part of its storytelling, but most of the time, even when it does this, what it's really trying to do is say something about the now. And you will very naturally be saying things about your life, the now, the things you're thinking about as you're writing a fantasy book. How much do you want it to be low fantasy, meaning really kind of tied to the real world, trying to make the economy and the setting very realistic and gritty or things like this? And how much do you want it to be high fantasy with lots of magic and dreams and, you know, things happening that fundamentally break the laws of thermodynamics, right and left? What kind of story are you telling? They both do different things.
Uh-huh. This kind of goes on to Julian's next and final question, which is, grimdark is very popular. Would there still be a market for lighter fantasy in which good triumphs over evil? I mean, it's giving, you know, how awful current affairs are of late, is there more of a market for lighter fantasy? I mean, you spoke earlier of that kind of Tolkien high fantasy. Grimdark, of course, George R. R. Martin's, you know, that kind of grimdark is all the rage now. But do you think people will start looking for that kind of lighter fantasy now, just as a form of escapism?
Sure. I mean, this is a very interesting, but I mean, it's a question that involves lots of assumptions, right? For instance, the assumption that grimdark is not escapism, and that light fantasy is, or that what is escapism and things like this. A lot of people say one of the reasons we read is to kind of expand our emotional thresholds. I don't know if this is true, but it is an interesting theory. The idea that, you know, our emotions, our tolerances are like a balloon. The more you blow them up and deflate them, the better they are expanding and holding that pressure. You know, that you can only push that metaphor so far because the balloon will eventually burst, which is not where we want to go. But the idea is that experiencing these, you know, really dark things in a grimdark story is a means of increasing your own emotional capacity, or of watching, you know, these terrible things happen. It can be very, very cathartic, and things like this. Why do we read? Why should we read? What's the line between escapism and literaryism and things like that? I have no idea. And I don't even want to make any assumptions about it. There is a market for a well-written story, regardless of what its tone is, and there is always a market for that. When I was trying to break in, I sat in an audience at a world fantasy convention where a bunch of panelists talked about how the vampire genre was done and Rice had killed it, no pun intended, and you shouldn't write vampire books. And Twilight came out like months after that, right? I mean, there's this assumption, oh, George R. R. Martin is really dominating the market now. Well, he dominated it more when I was breaking in. And I broke in, and Pat Rothfuss broke in, and a lot of people broke in. And so a well-written story is going to find an audience. And I think worrying too much about genre, I mean, I often say what you want to do is, as a writer, you want to ignore all sorts of business concepts, until you're done with the book. Like, don't worry about subgenre. Don't worry about how you're going to market this or sell this. Don't worry about any of that stuff until your book is done. When your book is done, shove the artist in the closet. Grab the manuscript, run away cackling, and figure out how you can exploit it for money, right? Totally, that's what you want to do. But while you're writing the story, just write the story you want to write.
Awesome advice. Josh Atkinson is wondering, do you create a story Bible for your series similar to the kind of ones they might use on a TV show?
Yeah, I use Personal Wiki. It's an open source software called WikidPad, which is spelled WikiDPad. And it's just for myself and my assistants. And it works like Wikipedia. It's really handy.
Awesome. We'll check that out. Richard asks, given how much you've written over the years and the scaling of an analysis and teaching of writing that you've done, have you come across anything about writing in the last few years that surprised you?
Last few years, something that surprised me. I'm sure there were. This is really hard for me to kind of reach out and pluck from my brain these sorts of questions for whatever reason, mostly because I tend to just put them into my podcast, Writing Excuses, right? My writing podcast, we end up discussing all these things. And so they just kind of get pulled out of my brain. And so they're no longer surprising to me, because to me, it's been, you know, a year since I did a podcast on that. And I don't know. I'm not sure if I can answer that one. Things constantly surprise me in little ways, the ways that things work for writers that don't work for me.
Excellent stuff. Well, we're all out of excuses. So, oh, no, wrong podcast. Sorry, podcast. Sorry. Yeah. Brandon, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Have a great day. Thank you.
My pleasure. You guys out there, keep writing.
What are your writing dreams? Finishing that book? Quitting the day job? Becoming a best-selling author? Since 2016, we've interviewed and studied the advice of over 500 best-selling authors who've collectively sold over 1 billion books. And in the Bestseller Academy, we've incorporated powerful and proven strategies for success, inspiring fiction and non-fiction authors just like you to reach new heights and write their best book ever. Ready to take your writing to the next level with accountability, craft, coaching, and the most inspiring and exclusive community of like-minded writers? Well, your bestseller dreams are just a click away. Join us today at bestsellerexperiment.com/academy. That's bestsellerexperiment.com/academy. As I said, I can't believe just how much good stuff there was in that interview. And I have so many notes, Mark. How do you manage to squeeze in all those questions in such a short interview?
Well, first of all, the thing I must acknowledge is our listeners, our Patreon listeners, who gave us a lot of those questions. I put a call out to our Patreon group for questions for Brandon, and I was deluged. So, we had some great questions there. And it was nice because I think Brandon, again, you know, gets asked the same questions again and again, but there were some good ones for him there. Yeah. And he rose to the occasion. And like I say, Brandon is a pro. He gives great answers, and he gives thoughtful answers as well. And he packs a lot in. It's good value for money, Brandon, as a guest.
Yeah, he was brilliant. So we're going to go a bit later on. We're going to go into what we call the deep dive. If this is one of the first podcasts you've listened to of the Bestseller Experiment, Mark and I go off into a very detailed discussion about things that we learned from the interview, and there's a lot of extra knowledge and advice that comes out of there. So if you want to listen to that, you can get that on the Patreon website, patreon.com/bestsellerexperiment. So Mark, tell us a bit about what's been happening on social media.
We've had some great stuff. Lots of people writing over Christmas telling us their ambitions for the year. Lots of new followers as well. We did have a shameless attempt to curry favor from at Wheelworks, which is WHEELWORX. He says, it's Rob Wheelworks. He says, I'm working my way through the backlist and just listened to episode 22, Ben Aronovich. It was brilliant. The only problem is if you read this tweet out on the show, I won't get to hear it for weeks. That's just shameless, Rob. Well done. It worked. Well done. Congratulations. And also, I want to say congratulations to Chris Stay, who is a relation. He's my cousin.
I was going to say, he's writing a book. Sounds like it. Yeah,
yeah, he's finished the first draft of his book 8 days later than planned. But yeah, he's finished. So big
eight days later, that's brilliant.
Big round of applause for Chris.
Well
that's
done,
brilliant.
Chris. So fantastic.
I've told him to lock that away for 6 weeks, and he said six weeks. So I don't know. We'll see how
that goes. That's the Mark Stay kind of prophecy. Is you've got to lock away your. You told me that. Do you remember? Like we had to lock it away, and then we ended up only having what about
three days?
No, we did. Yeah, 2 weeks, didn't we? We put it away for 2 weeks, and I've got to say, bowing to the Mr. Stay who's been here before, it definitely was very valuable to do that. And I think the 6 weeks would have been even better.
Yeah, you need that. You need that sense of perspective.
Good tip.
And an old friend of ours, Ed, who is at Nihilus on Twitter, he's been talking about how he's been restructuring his novel. And, you know, he says, I feel like I finally figured it out and it's much simpler now and I think it'll be stronger. And what he's doing is taking time to reflecting on what he's trying to do and where things come from rather than just a series of events. And this goes back to something we were doing with our book, which is instead of just glossing over stuff, stopping and digging deeper. And it helped our book tremendously. And I hope it works out for you, Ed, because I've read one of Ed's short stories and it's really, really good. I think he's going to be a brilliant writer. So
fantastic.
Really looking forward to seeing what happens there. But again, you know, the big event this week has, of course, been the chocolate hobnobs. So thank you to whoever sent me those. I'm eternally grateful. It's very, very thoughtful. I'm touched. I'm genuinely touched.
That's brilliant. I didn't get a packet. What's going
well,
on there?
You know, you will go and live in Canada, won't you?
Yeah, Canada's a bit too far away, isn't it? But by the way, I've just got to say, if you have created some writing goals for this year, come and stick them on our Facebook page because there's nothing better, is there, Mark, than a public declaration about what it is that you're going to try and achieve this year. And we know this works. So if 2018 is going to be your year to either break through, finish that book, start that book, whatever it is, come and declare to the very friendly Bestseller Experiment audience. We're all here to support each other. No one's here to kind of like take anyone out. It's a lovely community that's built around this podcast. Come and tell us what your goals are or email us and we'll read them out on the show if you like, because it will really hold you to account and we will dig them back out in about 6 months and say, so how's it going? But more importantly though, we want to celebrate with you when you actually accomplish the goals, because this podcast is not just about what, you know, our journey with our book. It's actually about celebrating everyone else who's attempting to finish their book and get it out there. So don't be shy, people.
Don't be shy. Come and say hi.
Ooh. Oh, that's
that
nice.
That rhymes.
Yeah,
that rhymes,
ring.
Man.
It's
yeah, okay. Excellent. Right, so please subscribe, rate and review us on iTunes. And thanks to Dave for editing us this week as well. As Sterling went from Dave, as always. We're on Facebook, which is Bestseller Experiment. We're on Twitter, which is at Bestseller XP. We're on Instagram, which is at Bestseller XP as well. We are also on Pinterest. So do come and say hi. If you're going to join us on the deep dive, well, we're going to be talking. And again, I just have to reiterate what my learned colleague said earlier. If you're not a fan of fantasy, the stuff we're going to talk about, you can apply to any genre. This stuff works right across the board. So we're going to be talking about trends. We're going to be talking about fan fiction. We're going to be talking about keeping focus. We're going to be talking about writing for markets and all sorts of other fun stuff. So jump in your submarine and join us for the deep dive.
Fantastic. So it's a goodbye from Mark 1.
And a goodbye from Mark 2. Goodbye!
Goodbye!
To read Back to Reality, the best-selling novel of the Bestseller Experiment by the two Marks, go to bestsellerexperiment.com/back to reality.
And subscribe to this podcast to get loads of extra bonuses. Go to bestsellerexperiment.com/subscribe.
Ooh.
Oh, that's nice.
That rhymes.
It's got a ring.
Okay.